Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Buzz. Buzz. Buzz.
Welcome back to a ticket-punched version of At the Buzzer, your Colorado Buffaloes podcast. For everything you need to know, we, of course, are with the Ralphie Report always, and Sam decided to take a nap because important things happen with CU. And that's usually how he responds, is with sleep first and then excitement second. When we say important things happen to CU, what we mean is about 5 minutes ago, we saw the ticket punch for the 2024 March Madness for this Colorado Buffaloes team, something that seemed crazy, a scant 2 months ago. To talk about this, you have one co-host, Jack. We're going to elevate Ryland to co-host for this episode. Welcome back, Ryland.
Hello. This is big news for me. Thanks for the co-host promotion for the next hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think after this, it becomes a Dune-style duel to figure out who gets the co-host back, you or Sam. Sam is obviously the Harkonnen boy. We finally have a superstar, our super special guest, whatever we're going to call it, our favorite to come on every time. If you need to know anything about Colorado basketball, you go to him first. Welcome back directly from the airport, Ben Burrows. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing okay. Let's call it okay. 5 days in Vegas is a lot. Apologies for the voice. I'm just happy to be alive, to be talking basketball, and to be talking about a good Colorado season.
Luckily, a Colorado season that is, like you said, still going. Let's back up a little bit from there. When I said it seemed crazy 2 months ago for CU's ticket to be punched, I do want to bring that up as to what we saw on the way to the NCAA tournament. Ben, you said you were in Vegas for the last 5 days, and part of that was a continuation of a pretty long win streak for this team. So we saw CU enter in Vegas as a 3 seed. I'm sure we all looked at Will Whalen's incredibly accurate prediction, but in January, did you see a top 4 seed or a 3 seed as a possibility for this team?
In the Pac-12, certainly not. I go back quite frequently to that Cal loss. I went on the Arizona and Arizona State legs of that 3-game road trip. Certainly the Arizona game got smoked. Arizona State, we probably should have won that game, but did some dumb things down the stretch. And then the Cal game, everyone knows we were up by 20 and pissed it away in the second half. Although we now know that Cal is okay. But nonetheless, at the time, that seemed like a death knell on the season, given how the non-conference went and we didn't post any of those big wins we needed, et cetera. But since then, I think we went 13-4. You know, and certainly since that USC game in mid-February, this has been a different team. Throughout January and realistically since December, I had been somewhat publicly but significantly privately complaining about the performance and roster and particularly the toughness that the team was showing. That's not a question I have anymore. I see a tough basketball team. I see a tab ball basketball team. I see a team that can rebound, that is more tougher mentally, maybe not as tough as I'd like, but tougher mentally. This is not the same basketball team that took the court on January 10th against Cal. This is not the same basketball team that took the court against Arizona. This is a different basketball team. This is a better basketball team. This is a team that I want to see play Boise State. I want to see play on national television with a national title on the line. Let's go.
Let's go. We saw as a three seed, so you get a bye in the conference tournament. Which has happened more often than not recently under Tad Boyle. That first game after the bye, Arizona State without their leading scorer lost to Utah. So CU played Utah in that first game. I think we all watched that. I'll start with my easy, quick observation that somehow that 15-point victory was the fourth highest margin of victory in the conference tournament ever for CU, which should tell you historical performance in the conference tournament for CU. So I guess going around the horn, like, how do we feel after that Utah game? And I'll take the other obvious one too. I'm sorry, Lawson Lovering, for having to play Eddie Lampkin for 30 minutes, but yeah, how do we feel?
I thought that was really fun. You know, like, Eddie just ate Lawson's lunch. Like, dude had no chance. And even like from before the season and media day, like, we were talking to Eddie and we asked Eddie, what games are you looking forward to? And he's like, I want to play Utah. We were like, oh, these games are going to be big. And they were. That was a really fun game. You know, I feel like we shot the ball well, like KJ, like, these things happen. That at this point, yeah, like, you see this guy, best player in the Pac-12. I'll go that far. We can have that Caleb Love discussion if we want to, but I don't blame you if you don't. That's how I'm feeling about that.
Yeah, it was a great game to be at. You know, going into the tournament, I just kept saying over and over again, just win. All we got to do is just win. A couple of my friends were asking me, you know, day of the game, like, how are you feeling? And I'm like, well, we either win or we don't. You know, I was taking a very disassociated look into it. You know, it was all in front of us. We came out, we played very well. 7 turnovers total for a team that has struggled with turnovers. We played a clean basketball game. We played a very good basketball game. You talked about Eddie. Eddie was dominant. And it wasn't just against 34. It was against everybody who we played with, including guys off the bench and other switches and doubles and everything else. He was all-encompassing. Between KJ and Eddie playing the way they were that game, that would have been very difficult for us to lose. We came out well. We scored 27 points, 27-ish, 30 points, something, in the first 10 minutes. You know, we came out strong. We kept our foot on. At no point did I feel that Utah was going to beat us. At no point did I feel stressed about it. They did come back. They did have that run. I think it was the under-8 timeout in the first half. It was just like, all right, shake it off. Let's do it again. And that's exactly what the boys did. It was an outstanding, outstanding performance against Utah.
Yeah, I think the other thing I want to call out too is, and I'm gonna lose his first name, but Madsen on Utah had given CU trouble in the past, and Tad called this out, I think, in his post game too. But Hadley just said, "I won him all game," and I think KJ helped too. But Madsen, I think, went like 3 for 15 or 3 for 14. When we talked about so when you talk about things like it's a different team and it feels a little bit grittier, like, that's the stuff I look at, where Ted's always talked about how perimeter defense, he just wants a guy who, like, takes the challenge. He's always talked about how he wants a guy who can be that lockdown or take the best player out of the game. And I think, I mean, KJ wants to be that guy and is that guy. He spends a lot of energy, but I think he has another one with Hadley who steps up as much as possible. And he's such a physical defender against someone like Madsen that really gave him trouble. It was hard for them to get anything on offense. And I also want to call out KJ and I'm going to miss his name too, but number five for Utah, I want to say Brown. I don't think it's Brown, but
he had triple double.
Thank you. Yeah. He had triple double almost against ASU and did literally almost nothing against CU.
KJ on Smith, that may have been his best single defensive performance I've ever seen KJ have. Smith was an absolute non-factor, and not for lack of trying. The kid was pushing it. You brought up the three-point shooting. You brought up Madsen. Team as a whole, they were 8 of 30. You know, we have at times fallen asleep on perimeter switching and getting through screens and things like that. I thought we had a great game plan. We were switching up what we were doing situationally and on different personnel. And to keep a team like Utah that's got a bunch of shooters, it's not just Madsen, they got a bunch of guys, to 8 of 30 in a key game like that. Yeah, it probably helped that Utah had to play the day before, but, that's a hell of a performance. And KJ locking down Smith, keeping him from getting those. He had five assists. But he wasn't getting to the line. He wasn't getting to the lane. He wasn't going off. That was just amazing.
he's played a million minutes since February. He knows it's his last year on a Colorado uniform, even though he did not walk for senior day. I guess we're all assuming that is the case. And he's playing like it, and it's so fun to watch. It's really fun to watch him. Because I don't know, the energy he expends is incredible every game, and he keeps coming back for more. And speaking of that, I guess the next game, next night, CU is in the semifinal against the 2 seed in the tournament, Washington State. They split the series before this year, and Washington State was just coming off of a relatively easy win the night before. And once again, this was exactly, I think, how Tad Boyle and Kyle Smith both like playing basketball, as in as little shot making as possible. A lot of blunted rocks were thrown around. But in the end, as a lot of people said at the outset, Tad Ball won out. And that was as vintage as you can get. That was like a 2012 Chianti from the Tad Ball wine cellar. And I don't know. It was – For some freaks on Twitter and people like me, yeah, that was a good throwback win. This is what basketball is supposed to feel like. It's just gritty, and you have no idea who's going to score for the next 5 minutes, but you know it's not going to be more than two baskets.
I kept telling friends. Go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good. My bad.
Okay, no worries. So I kept telling my friends that I have never enjoyed a basketball game more than that Washington State one. And it wasn't because it was the best exhibition of the sport or this, that, or the other thing. I was locked in from the second that game tipped. I was in every coaching decision, both sides. I knew exactly what, I was watching, and I was enthralled by the chess match. Tired players going at each other, physically aggressive on both ends. And just two teams slugging it out. You brought up 2012. I was in Los Angeles that year, and it reminded me so much of those games against Oregon in the semis, particularly in Arizona in the final. Just, all right, it's gritty. It's grinded out, possession to possession. We just have to execute. Doesn't matter what the score is. You just have to execute. We were doing that on both sides of the ball. God, I love that game. That is Tad Ball at its best.
Go ahead, Rylan.
Yeah, that game is, I think, the game that sold me on this team. Like, I knew this team was really good and really talented, but we knew this team could score. Like, in every game they've won, they've been putting up like 75, 80 points, and they've been just outscoring people. But we didn't know if they were there defensively. We haven't seen them win a rock fight like that since January when they played USC, when they were down at halftime. winning a rock fight like that, I'm completely sold on this team now. Like, this is a really good basketball team that can win multiple games in the tournament. And I feel that way now after watching them do that to a team like Wazoo.
And Eli Amkin was instrumental again. Obviously, KJ was instrumental again. De Silva did a lot to carry that offense early, too. I thought De Silva had a great tournament all around. The other thing I want to call out is, for the first time in 12 games, or 8 games maybe, I believe, we saw Cody Williams come back to action. And absolutely against Utah, he was not moving as he normally does. And I thought you saw a little bit more rust get shaken off against Washington State, but he's still not exactly – he's not what we saw in January or in non-con. He's not moving that fluidly yet. But I love that he got some minutes back. And then speaking of back, this is the worst segue I've ever had in my life. I'm pretty sure my favorite player on this team is now Bangot Dak. I love him so much, and I know there are better players, and I know there are much more well-rounded players, but I don't know. There are not a lot of players that are as bouncy and as long as Bangot Dak is in a CU uniform. I want to say Tyler Bay is close, but even Tyler Bay is not 6'10", 6'11". Dak is a I don't know. To me, it's like a Dana Altman Oregon big that somehow made his way to CU, and he's fun to watch, man.
Yeah, it's a different profile, right? It's a different profile from players we've had on the roster in previous years. I would say Andre or Tyler are both probably as bouncy, if not more bouncy, than he is. But BD, just in terms of explosiveness, he looks different to what you typically expect a Colorado basketball player to look like from an athletic profile. And yeah, I see the same things you do. His growth curve is accelerating dramatically. His confidence in the game, his confidence in himself, his ability to express both his athleticism and his knowledge of where he should be and what he should be doing, and his ability to compete. Like, he wasn't backing down against guys. There was a couple points where guys were driving at him. They wanted to put him in difficult spots. He didn't flinch. You know, he was standing up to guys in the Utah game. I think it was Lawson went right at him and didn't flinch at him.
Yep.
Sorry for using his name. You know, in similar spot, even against Oregon, you know, guys driving right at him, didn't flinch, played position, didn't give up an inch. He is going to be a good basketball player for us. I'm excited about him.
And I don't want to, I try not to nuggetify the college basketball, but I will say, if Eddie Lampkin returns next year, I would love some Jokic, Aaron Gordon, Eddie Lampkin, Bangot Dak, like dunker spot minutes where Lampkin will throw those pass. It doesn't matter if they're anywhere near close as accurate as Jokic. He will throw that pass every time. So I would love to see some of those, because he gets up, man. Like, there are times when he just hangs in the air. And I love his goaltending calls, which is a stupid thing to say too, but like, how often do you see you bigs get goaltending calls because they're too high in the air and they can catch it at the top, you know? Like, that's just fun to watch. And not to get too in the weeds for the future as well, but I also love the defensive profile that Hassan Diop, and Bangot Dak provide. I think Bangot Dak is going to be elite on help defense, a la Tyler Bay or Andre Roberson. I do think Hassan is incredible on ball right now, and I think he'll get even better next year. Like, his foot speed's great. And as he gets stronger, that's going to keep getting better. So I love the defense that those two will provide in the future. Anyways, after Washington State, you got the Pac-12 title game. On the other side, Pac-12 Player of the Year, Caleb Love, really tried to keep his team in it, but unfortunately, his 4 points wasn't enough. His 11 missed shots weren't enough, and Arizona fell to a zombified Oregon team that has like 6 healthy players. Dana Altman does it again. And CU is playing Oregon in the Pac-12 title game. We saw Oregon open up as a 4-point underdog. And it's really looked like a chance for poetic justice. CU to win the first and last Pac-12 conference tournaments. Like we said, Ben, you were there in person. I don't know. What'd you think about this game?
Dante was too much. And when he came back midseason, that was an uh-oh moment for me. I kind of like, oh, crap, now they got Dante back. We still beat him twice, but, you know, he is a difference maker. We talked about BD. Well, you know, Dante's got his level of athleticism. Well, not his level, but, you know, he's very athletic. Dante's a very athletic forward, you know, still as tall, and is also the size of a Mack truck. You know, you saw how difficult Eddie, who was thrown around every other forward this conference had against against Dante over over 32 minutes Dante played, and Eddie was primary defender on him for most of those. BD was the other one. I mean, we tried a couple different things. We switched, we doubled, we tried to front a little bit. I don't think we tried it as much. You know, could we have gone zone? Maybe, I don't know. But Dante was just freaking killing us. And there was really no answer we had for him. And that was a difference maker. You know, all praise to Shellstad and Cuisinart, who I was calling Cuisinart all week, but just for argument's sake. All credit to those guys, but they won the game because Dante was getting offensive rebounds. He didn't miss a shot. 20, 25, and 9. He was insane.
Yeah.
And, hey, sometimes you're going to run into player performances like that. I think we were good enough on the day to win. We had a couple of dumb mistakes. You know, I think KJ, he had 4 turnovers. All 4 of them were really dumb, I think. They weren't mistakes that, you know, you're like, well, he was trying too hard or something like that. They were mental mistakes. But KJ is your workhorse, and sometimes that happens. And we don't get there or be as close as we were without KJ. You know, Luke was outstanding. He was crushing it from outside. He was 3 for 6 in the game, but I think he was 3 for 4 until like the last couple minutes. God bless that Colorado boy doing his thing. And I think we were good enough. We just didn't close. We couldn't find a way to get Dante not going. And that was a ball game. And that happens at this level. That happens when it's one and done. Sometimes you just got to tip your cap. Good on you.
I kind of hate how much I love Jackson Shellstad. I'm not used to liking Oregon guard. But I don't know. Like, that dude is just really, really good. And for a freshman, too, to play as free as he does and to make some of the shots he makes is, like you said, I at the beginning of the game when he made that crazy step back, end of the clock, like, fadeaway three – like, that's just an NBA – that's a hard shot for an NBA player. And you're 18 years old in the Pac-12 championship game, and you win that. And it's you make that shot, and it's hard. That's hard to face. I thought there's some 2 other things that kind of hurt CU. Like you said, turnovers were kind of an issue. All game, Oregon does that to a lot of teams. They've done that for a million years. That's Dana Altman's style. Came back against yesterday in a big way. And that's gonna hurt them when they watch film, if they watch film of that game. And the other thing I think that kind of happened all tournament, you know, this team, like you said, can't question the toughness. KJ took a nasty fall from Miles Rice and also a celeb shot from Kyle Smith at the end of the game, along the baseline or along the sideline. And Hadley's had a iffy hand for like 3 days. And I think at the end, Hadley just, he destroyed Oregon in that road matchup to what we thought St. John's NCAA tournament berth. And he just couldn't bring that back this time. And I think that was a big difference is he doesn't have that right now because I think he's fighting through that injury. There might be some other things too. But, yeah, he there wasn't firepower past our obvious options that helped alleviate it. I think there's only 19 made field goals for CU in the game. And it's hard to win. It's hard to win with that. Anything else, Rylan?
The turnovers were my big takeaway. I think we had 23 turnovers, or we had 13 turnovers that they turned into 23 points. They had 3, and we didn't convert on any of them. It just kind of – that kind of killed us. And, of course, Dante. Like, that Thursday night game last week when we played him in Eugene, he was perfect. He was 10 for 10. You knew it was coming. You knew that he was going to absolutely destroy you down low. couldn't do anything mm-hmm. about it. It's unfortunate, but Dante's just really good. Just got outworked. It happens. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating. It felt like the stars were aligning. We got to duck Arizona. Just didn't materialize. I'd be very happy, and I am very happy that we do not have to play an Oregon school in a championship game ever again, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's why you recruit five-star bigs, right? Like, Dante is just that good, you know? That's why you do it.
Yeah.
And Oregon, as usual, like, I don't necessarily like the way he runs his program. Dana Altman is a good in-game coach, and I think that's probably Tad's worst attribute is in-game coaching, at least strategizing like that. And Dana Altman does a good job there. And obviously his team got up for this tournament, so – Beating Arizona and CU back to back is those are good wins. And congrats to that team. Like I said, I wish I liked Shellstat less, but I don't. He's really awesome. I'm excited to see him in the tournament. But it would have been nice to punch the regular season or to punch the win records in for the team and win that last tournament. To leave no doubt, as some people say, and to give KJ some hardware. But just didn't work out that way. So I don't know. I don't come away it didn't for some reason this one didn't hurt like 2021 did. I don't know if you feel the same way, you too, but 2021 definitely stung more with McKinley and that team. Why that's the case to me, but
that 21 team is everyone's talking about. Well, what's the best team of all time that Colorado's had? Best basketball team,
right?
For me, it's 21, and that's statistically, but that's also the quality of the team on the court. Yeah, we've had better individual performances. Certainly, Chauncey and Spencer's probably the best individual player we've had during the tap ball era and things like that. But in terms of team, that 21 team, I wish people had been able to be in the arena because they would respect it more. Keep asking, I kept seeing people ask, when's the last time we didn't have a bye or we had a bye in the Pac-12 tournament? I was like, well, a couple years ago.
Exactly.
When was the last time we were a three seed? 21, guys, this is not ancient history. This is, 3-4 years ago, but it's because it was behind closed doors. Everyone forgets it. That team was incredible. Yeah. That team should not have lost to Oregon State.
Free throws,
there
man.
There is one
free throws,
game,
man.
One single game over the Tad era that I could change the result. There's nothing in the NCAA tournament. That is the one game I would change. And it's really just a minute. I changed 1 minute in that game. That one stings more. I came out of the game yesterday and just kind of like, well, it was what it was.
Yeah.
That team, we talked about it 2 months ago, shouldn't have been there. Wouldn't have been there. But they turned it around and they sucked it up and they figured it out. And they almost damn near ran the table. The final month of the season. And at that point, you're playing with house money. And if the house takes their money back, okay, fine. But 21, that still haunts me, and I know it still haunts Tad. He referenced it multiple times at the start of the year. So, yesterday was okay. It was what it was.
It was what it was. I'm seeing some somehow still. I guess even just like in my little groups, some blowback for like Tad never winning the big one. But I guess in my head, this is the difference in some perspective is like. Winning the conference semifinal for Colorado was absolutely a quote unquote big one. So like he's winning the big ones a lot. CU as a program has been in 4 conference championship games ever. 3 of them are under Tad Boyle. So sucks that only one of them went to Tad, but he's responsible for 3 of the 4 appearances anyways. Obviously this team was disappointing for a decent stretch of the season, but if you can go, 9-1 in the last 10 games of the year, it's hard to be upset. That's hard to be upset at that. And in the end, it didn't end up mattering too much, I guess, in terms of tournament seeding, which we've strategically kept near the end of the episode to get those listening minutes up. So Right as we started recording, we saw the line come through for CU and the NCAA tournament. This bubble, it was ended up being incredibly strong this year just because of the amount of bid steals and the amount of weird mixy Power Six teams. So there was, even though CU was 24-10, absolutely still some doubt in some people's minds that they weren't going to make it in. Just a weird year all around. Those were assuaged almost immediately. A lot of people were watching Selection Sunday show. If you're a freak like me, you're watching Selection Sunday show and some nice championship pro Halo on a Sunday. So feel free to double dip there. And we saw CU is going to end up going to Dayton playing against Boise State as a 10 seed for a play-in game. Which means they are one of the last four into the tournament. So I believe that the official seeding came out and CU was the third to last team in the NCAA tournament. They are playing the fourth to last team in, who is Boise State, and they open as a 2-point favorite. The winner of that game gets Florida in their region as the 7 seed. And if you want to get real crazy, Marquette is the 2 seed after that, assuming that they beat the 15. So CU's in, man. The CU made it in. How do you feel about that draw?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I mean, I'm like you said, I'm just happy we made it in. I was kind of scared going into today. And when they said that A&M was in, I forget what they were. They were like a 9 seed, and then FAU got that 8 seed, and I was sweating it out. But I'm happy that we made it in. I think that the fact that we have to play in Boise is a little bit ridiculous, or play in Dayton is a little bit ridiculous. But That Boise State matchup is going to be good. Tad versus Leon Rice is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, you talk about being in Dayton. With all the bid thieves, with all a really difficult bubble, with almost every bubble team winning big games the last 2-3 weeks, you have to consider the fact that in a normal year, we're not in Dayton. Certainly the 10 seeds are not in Dayton. Usually it's 12s or 13s or 11s. We're probably an 8 or a 9 and very safely in the tournament. So it's a different bubble this year. We survived it. You look at FAU and A&M, those kind of teams probably benefited from some seeding, you know, adjustments due to, you know, who's in which bracket and things like that. Because I don't look at them as 8-9 teams. They're a little bit lower than that, but whatever. I'm not in the committee room. I said a couple minutes ago on Twitter, we deserve to be in this tournament, and we do. Mm-hmm. And there should be no shame about playing in Dayton. There should be no shame about having to make this trip. That is an opportunity for us to win a ball game. We can beat Boise State. And we should look at it like that. As a fan base, we should be proud that the team was able to thread the needle. I was putting together a number of different scenarios over the last couple of weeks of how we could possibly still make it into the tournament. And I didn't expect us to win 8 in a row down the stretch. that never entered my, that was not a single one of my scenarios. And even that, we barely made it into the tournament because of everything else that was going on around the country. Credit to the team. They earned this. They earned their way into this tournament. There's multiple points on, throughout the year where they could have just let the slide continue to happen or just keep, you know, trading wins and losses and all sorts of stuff. They figured it out, and they earned their way in, and we can beat Boise State. I'm looking forward to that game. I was in Myrtle Beach, or really Conway, South Carolina, in November of 22 when we played them. Mm-hmm. And I hope some of the players on that team, KJ, Tristan, you know, Ruffin, Luke, some of those guys are no longer with us, including Lawson and Neek. again, I apologize for using his name. But I hope some of those, the members that are still on our roster who remember that game, take that as a challenge, because Boise State smacked us in the mouth down there. And they out-physicaled us. They out-hustled us. They out-tabballed us. And that hopefully will be the challenge to our Colorado Buffaloes when they take the court in Dayton, is you have to rise to that challenge. You have to be that team that beat Washington State. You have to be that team that went on the road and beat Oregon. You have to be that team. You have to bring it now tonight, because Boise State will be that same brutally tough, vicious bunch that smacked us around in Conway, South Carolina 2 years ago.
So just, yeah, I guess looking back at that history too, we talked about Tadball a little bit, and Leon Rice is absolutely, of the same school of thought. We were talking a little bit before the mic's been hot. Leon Rice and Tad Boyle coached together over the summer on the U19 team for the USA Olympic squads. So they're obviously familiar with each other, pretty friendly with each other. I know at least, you know, Tad had nothing but respect after Boise State, as Ben said, punked CU in that Myrtle Beach Invitational. And Mountain West was a crazy hard league this year. Boise State did a really good job staying on top of that. So it's not like they aren't battle tested. This isn't a low major getting a shot after an AQ or, you know, some good wins in a bad conference. Like they played a lot of really good teams this year, arguably more than CU. So, they're not going to come in not ready for a fight, as you mentioned. They looks like, I'm just looking at the roster right now and a little bit more into the stats. It looks like the shortest player on the team is the point guard, 6'3", Roddy Anderson. And then the rest of the starting lineup varies between 6'7", and 6'9". So, yeah, that's a big team. That's a big team. And they are not afraid to get physical. So, I hope CU can rest up and heal some of those injuries. That's going to be a dogfight in that first game. But at some point, like you said, I'm just happy that CU's in. Did not look like it was going to happen. And also, if you are into this sort of thing like I am, if you wish cast a little bit, getting past Boise State will be tough but doable. And then playing Florida as a 7 seed of the 7 seeds available, I think it's probably the best possible draw for CU right now. They're a pretty solid team, obviously made to the SEC quarterfinals, but they just lost their starting center on a brutal leg injury yesterday. It was tough to watch. And if you look at the metrics, they don't match up that much better than CU right now. So if you want to go ahead to that 7 seed, I think that's probably about as well as CU could have hoped it went for the tournament.
With Florida, it's interesting. People who really follow things might remember the name Zion Poland, who was on that UC Riverside team who came to Boulder a couple years ago.
He's on Florida now?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, he's a
shot. And they were like, oh, that would be a great transfer target and all this other stuff. Well, he ended up on Florida. He's a really good point guard. He's a really good point guard. Be interested to see how he does. I guess, you know, hopefully we get to play him. But even against Boise State, I'd be keen on him. I just want to win at this point. I don't really care who we play.
It seems almost about as best case engineering scenario you can get going into the tournament. There's going to be some knacks. Obviously, KJ got a little bit nicked up. Hadley's still working on some of that stuff, but Cody will continue to work himself back into shape by next Wednesday. CU will also be joined by CSU in Dayton. CSU ends up playing Virginia and I think a pretty interesting stylistic matchup, because Nico Medved is not a Tony Bennett disciple. So that's gonna be a weird stoppable force meets a movable object deal.
That is a cursed matchup. That is just from the depths of hell that matchup has come to strike at the heart of college basketball. That I don't think too much about Nico, but I feel bad for him.
Yeah. That's tough. And I don't know the exact number, but I do know Virginia won almost, I think, four games in a row while scoring less than 55 points in the months of February and March. That's gross, man. That's gross. So if you can figure that out, good on him. I also want to point out, too, and this blew my mind. I didn't see this because I wasn't looking at the full seeding list. St. John's got left out, and they are top 25 in KenPom. I don't know if I've ever seen that before.
Dang.
There's a couple of records being broken this year in terms of, you know, highest or lowest ranked teams who are being left out either in the net or KenPom. I was actually looking that up. There, KenPom, like once every two or three years, somebody in the top 30 will get left out of KenPom. I didn't look at the net, but it's not as rare as you would think. But certainly both them and Indiana State, I think in a normal year, those guys are in. And tough bubble this year.
I just knowing Rick Pitino, I would be worried about some horses' heads with the committee tomorrow, but you know. That's a tomorrow problem. At the end of the day, CU got in. Pac-12 against all odds gets four teams into the tournament, which is crazy. No kidding. Even like a week ago, that's crazy. But I'm glad to see it in its swan song. Let's make Washington State and Oregon State as much money as possible when we can. Because I believe if my news is right, they get all the payouts from every team, using that court ruling. So let's send them off well before the WCC, and enjoy the last year of non Big 12. I will say I'm a little shocked that Oklahoma was left out. I'm glad they were because they didn't win a lot of games. But when you play that many Q1 games, it's hard to leave them out, and the Big 12 is far and away the best basketball league this year. So I was shocked that they were out. Any other thoughts before we close up shop here?
Go ahead, Ryan. No, go ahead, Ryan.
So I was going to say the women likely will host too. I know we haven't really spoken about the women yet, but we're waiting until I think another 50 minutes until that bracket comes out. They're likely to host over Oklahoma, get that four seed, which is great news. We'll have to see. Maybe the selection committee doesn't agree with me, and they probably don't. I don't know. But that's good news, but that's all I have to say.
Most bracketologists have them up there, so it's not just you, Ryan. Sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we're of the exact same mind. It's almost like an inverse scenario from what the men were dealing with, right? With the men, everyone else was winning, and it was putting a lot of pressure on them. The women really struggled down the stretch, but everyone else on their seed line, I think, is going to help them stay at the four level and host some games here in Boulder, which is, you know, long term what they deserve. Getting an opportunity to see Jalen play another time or two. That's good. That's good for the soul. You want to see Jalen play because she's outstanding, and that team as a whole deserves a lot of credit. And two more pack buildings for them. That's a good reward. So yeah, to your point, I think they'll get it, but also I think they've earned it. So
agreed.
I saw that people were putting out like projected opponents. I don't think for the women's team, like you said, we don't even necessarily know the seed line, so I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves there. But tough finish on the stretch for them too. I think they went 2-5 in the last seven in the Pac-12. That can happen just because of who you're playing, but some question mark games against Wazoo, especially at the end of the year, didn't finish how they want to. If they do end up hosting after that, I think it's going to be a really good chance to get right. And try to make another run like they did last year, because this team is super talented. Just would love another person to dribble and or shoot on a team because sometimes they can get one dimensional on offense. Well, that's about all I got on my end too. I don't know if we all saw, but KJ and Tristan both made conference tournament first team as well. I think both well deserved there. De Silva was smooth down the stretch, and obviously KJ is KJ. Would have loved to see some Eddie Lankin love, but and Paul Dante is going to take that center spot, obviously, and run away with it. So, good news there. And yeah, I guess Ben, if you can get there to Dayton, would love to see you out there. And if you can't, hope you get to make it to I believe what the region games are in. Oh my God, I'm blanking. Indianapolis. Thank you. I was going to say Omaha, but I don't. That's the other region.
Yeah, I've got to take a look at some flight maps, and I also have a business trip the following Monday, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, for those wondering, there are direct flights from Denver to Dayton. You can get in there, so I'll fight you for it.
one would hope so. That's the way flight was born. They should have direct flights everywhere. I know that's not how it works, but I would love if Dayton just had a gigantic airport. unfortunately the Wright brothers are not that enterprising. Ryland, thanks again for coming on. We appreciate
thanks for
it.
Having me.
Absolutely. You know, I do miss Sam's reticence to enjoy anything Colorado sports related. It's what makes this podcast special, but your enthusiasm is appreciated. And then Ben, super guest once again, thanks for coming back on after our harrowing 5 days and the capital of sin, but always a pleasure.
Appreciate you all. Happy to be on. Go Buffs. Let's beat Boise.
Let's go beat Boise. All right. See ya.
Buffs. 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 Buffs.